It's all about the stats. It's all about the data. We do X amount of this, that, and the other. But you know, there's so many things to be worked up about and to be concerned about. Why should the general public care? You need to take people on a journey. Don't just throw numbers at them.
Welcome to Communicating Purpose. I'm John Higginson, founder of communications agency Higginson Strategy. And I believe that the best way to get a message across clearly is by talking about something you honestly and passionately believe in. By doing so, you bring people with you. Your passion becomes theirs, and I call this the power of purpose. Today, I'm joined by Ben Ashmore, Head of External Affairs at FareShare. FareShare is one of the UK's leading charities tackling hunger, food waste, and food poverty, delivering over 128 million meals in the UK last year alone. Before joining FareShare, Ben worked as a senior comms roles for the Chartered College of Teaching and the National Lottery, among other jobs. Ben, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Can you just start by telling us a bit about your journey to where you are today?
Well, yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, John. It's always slightly terrifying to be reminded of all my previous jobs and my history and to where I am today. So I started off going to university. I was the first one in my family in Birmingham, the greatest city in the world, to go to Warwick Uni and studied law. And it was about, I think it was about halfway through the first term, I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to become a lawyer. It was all about going into financial law and all that. And it just wasn't interesting. I was more interested in the advocacy side of law and defending and speaking up for causes. So that kind of took me on a bit of a journey after leaving uni via some great time working in HMV, doing some internships at PR agencies, working in events at a students' union, and then kind of started my career in the environment agency as a press officer. I have no idea what's going on, but thrown into the deep end. And it's kind of gone from there. Just it started off as press, and it's just expanded into public affairs, marketing, digital, always human, quite close to the charity sector, because that's where my heart lies, and that not-for-profit to where I am today. So at some point, I'll probably decide what I want to do with the rest of my life and what I want to do when I grow up. But I've yet to work that out.
Oh. And I know that you started off in music, didn't you? Because that was the same path as I had. When I went to university, the first place I went is to my student paper, and I said, I want a job. And I'm into music. I was into dance music. And they said, well, guess what? We're going to give you free CDs if you'll review the music, and you can get into gigs for free. And I thought, hold on, this is the best thing in the world. I'm definitely going to do that. And I became dance music editor. I think you might have taken a similar path. So just tell us about that.
Yeah, so when during this first term, when I decided that I'm going to get involved in much more fun things than studying law, I ended up joining the student radio station and starting up a radio show on there, where I almost became enemies of the student newspaper. So if we'd have been at uni, I'd have probably made your life hell by just trying to wind them up, which is very naughty. But and I used to, like, you go to the gigs, review gigs. I did reviewing for various music sites, was in a band, all that kind of thing. And then after uni, when I went back to work at the Students' Union, I set up a club night, an indie night, being a DJ and doing all of that, which was awesome. And that's where I met my wife. She was one of the other DJs, and we got together on the first night. And, you know, like, we've flash forward, been married 10 years, got a kid. And yeah, it's been all because of the wonders of indie music. So thanks indie music in 2006 and 2007.
And it's all back in again, isn't it, really? All that music's come back.
All comes back. It's time is a circle. It always comes back, doesn't it? Everyone loves a bit of it, all the retro vibes.
Well, we better get back to work, haven't we? So just elaborate on FareShare's mission and how you communicate the strategy of it.
Yeah, so at FareShare, we're all about tackling the huge problem of food waste. There are billions worth of meals that are going to waste every year at farm level. This is food that could be feeding people. There is still far too much food insecurity across the UK, you know, families and children struggling with where their next meal's coming from. So effectively, we take working with food partners and farm level, taking this food and getting it to over 8,000 charities across the UK. So they're taking this food and they're using it for all these fantastic different purposes, whether it's community centres, some food banks, after school clubs, old people classes, teaching all these kind of skills. And it's like going to about helping over a million people over every year, this food that could be going to waste. And it's making a huge difference to lives, but you know, there's still all this food going to waste, and the need for this food is not declining. It's going up and up, and more people, especially working families, we're seeing coming to the charities. So we're working really closely with the 8,000 charities that get food from via Fair Share, and working with partners in the food industry and the government to just try and access more of that food, because it's not right that it's going to waste when it could be doing so much good. It's just the environmental damage and also just the damage to society by it not being used.
Well, just tell someone like me that doesn't really understand food economics and how it works. Why is this food going to waste? What's happening? Is it getting close to sell by date and they're throwing it away, or what's the waste food?
So there's a bit of that. Definitely a bit of that. But then you look at farm level. So there's these food in farms that it might be a farmer has been required or is growing a huge glut of produce, like huge amounts of, say, carrots. And maybe there's not as many carrots needed for those supermarkets. So what happens to those carrots? They go to waste, or they go to turn into animal feed. So right. There's problems with like seasons, and you know, the wet weather impacts what kind of food is being grown. There's just not the demand for it. Then yeah, supermarkets, it's the wonky veg, it's the food with a short shelf life. But we can take that, extend the shelf life, freeze it, turn it into soup. So there's so many different ways. And there's also the cost, you know, farmers getting that food out the farm into a charity, not cheap. So that's why we're trying to get the government then to work with us to try and make it more accessible than it is.
And what does Fair Share actually do in that process then? Are you just tell us of the various bits that you're doing in that process of going from a farmer that may have grown carrots and there's not the same demand for them. So they've got this shed load of carrots that they don't know what to do with. And they call up you at Fair Share and say, help us out. We want to make sure they don't go to waste. What do you do from there?
So, I mean, at its most basic, we're a logistics charity. So we will collect that food, or they will deliver it to us if they're at a supermarket. We have networks, warehouses across the UK. So all this food from supermarkets, from farms, from other like retail comes into our sites. And the local charities almost have like a shopping list of food that they're after. And we will pick all this food, put it all into boxes, all the food that comes in, and just deliver it to local charities. So we're in every single local authority. And I think people don't really recognise just how many charities that we're working with or getting food from us. So all that food is coming into us and we're getting it out there. And if it's too short, we can turn it into a soup. We can freeze it, turn it into frozen produce. You know, so we're extending the life of food. It's just better going to people than it is into animal feed or turned into energy. It should go to people first. And I think that's at Fair Share's heart. People first before it goes anywhere else.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't even realise that food is turned into energy, that it's just, it might go into an anaerobic digester or something else like that. It might be turns straight into fertilizer that goes back onto fields, but obviously that's a lower end thing to do than actually giving it to people as actual food.
Yeah. There's a food it's very technical. There's like this food hierarchy, but people should be at the top. Obviously, anaerobic digestion, great. We don't want to waste that food, but it can go to people first. That should be number one.
Yeah. As you mentioned there, you've mainly worked across the third sector in all your jobs that you've done and lots of different jobs there. How do you think that affects your approach to marketing and communications?
Yeah, I think, and this is something I've seen in a few of the organisations I joined, that it's all about the stats. It's all about the data. We do X amount of this, that and the other. But I think we need to, and the thing that I'm always keen is to put the stories of the people, like the views of the people that we work with or that we support, at the heart of all of the communications. And that's something we do at FairShare, like the stories of the people that are receiving this food and why they need this food and the difference it can make. You need to take people on a journey. What's the need? How does it make a difference? Why should you care? Why should the general public care? What about, you know, there's so many things. You look at the news, there's so many things to be worked up about and to be concerned about, why those organisations I work for. And it was the same at, say, Child College of Teaching and things like that. It was always about why should we care? What are the stories of good? Why is good teaching? Why is a great teacher important? And why making them the best that they can be in the job? Why does that matter to your children? And kind of taking people on that journey. Don't just throw numbers at them. Like, I'm rubbish with numbers anyway. Like, I can't. I always forget numbers, which is not great in comms. But take people on the journey and make it personable, and that's just as simple as you can, you know. And there's always, like, FairShare, what it does is it can be quite convoluted. We admit that. So there's work we still need to do to make it as simple as possible. But it's got to be people at the heart and driven by people.
Yeah. Well, comms people are often not that good at numbers because, you know, numbers people go into other fields, don't they? You become an accountant or a financial whiz or something like that if you're good at numbers.
So
it's fairly standard. And also, I think that's a really good thought there on stories. You know, it was actually when we drilled down and you talked about carrots that we had a pure story there on what, you know, what FairShare is. You need to actually drill down into, okay, let's have a clear example. And often when people get into their own job, they move away from the examples and they start talking kind of code almost, and you need to get back to that. There was a...
Yeah, and I was just going to say that you are experts at that as well. Like, I remember reading the stuff about the WASPI women that, like, there's all the data, there's all the economics, but it's the impact on these people's lives, and I think that's... was the stuff that I find really resonated.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that. Yeah, because, as you pointed out there, Higginson Strategy, which is the communications agency that I run, works with WASPI women. WASPI women are Women Against State Pension Inequality, women born in the 1950s, who have been hit by the pension age change. They weren't told about it in time to build up enough pension. And so for that age group in particular, they were born in an age when they were expected to quit work as soon as they had children. There was an expectation that they came from a culture where it was expected that they'd stay married for the rest of their lives. And so the husband would be out working, they would earn the money, and they were hit by this perfect storm of the 1960s kind of cultural change where, as we know, 50% of couples now split up, 50% of marriages don't work. And you've got millions of women out there in Britain today living in abject poverty because they are living on a very tiny state pension. Mm. They didn't build up the pension pot. They've got something like a tenth of the total pension pot of men same age group. Because men generally stayed in the workplace, carried on building up their private pension, and that's theirs. And those men have got that. So they're seeking compensation there. And we worked with them in a couple of ways, actually. We actually did look at the data and we said, we need to start talking about the number of WASPI women that are dying each year waiting for this compensation. because they're dying at a high rate. And when we're talking about that those numbers, that really drives it home. So that's some of the work we've done over the last 4 years there. And as you say, it's both working with numbers, data, and individual stories, because we are coming up to, there'll be 300,000 WASPI women will have died very soon. We know because we've put a ticker onto their website that ticks up every 13 minutes another WASPI woman dies. And that just keeps it nice and relevant, and it keeps that pressure up, so that when the government's dragging its heels, as it is, this Labour government in opposition said it would pay compensation to WASPI women. And as soon as they've come in, what have they done? Rachel Reid has not offered any compensation whatsoever. So it's really appalling what they've done there. And we're working with those WASPI women to do that. So thanks for that opportunity, Ben, for me to explain that campaign. It's a really important, really important one that we really care about. What's been one of the biggest communications wins that you've had in your career, do you think?
I think, I always feel like I'm only as good as I'm constantly chasing the next win and the next piece of success. So I always feel like that bearing, like I've not had a success in a while. So I think at Fairshare, we're really fortunate that our Where's the Food campaign to try and encourage the government, the previous current government, to support Fairshare, access more funding for food redistribution. Huge success. The previous government announced it. The current government are very supportive of it. And we had protests at the Conservative Party conference in 2023. A lot of attention, I think more attention than we'd ever had at Fairshare for the kind of campaign inside. And we've won awards for it. So I'm really proud of that. And then also, so that's one thing, and a huge team effort. Like, I'm so thankful for the team and all the work that they've done on that and getting the story and the need and working with the government. But also at the Charter College, you know, I was there during the height of the pandemic, and it was like education was so challenging and the impact on teachers. And we, I think it made the Charter College, its work to speak and advocate for teachers. The CEO, Dame Alison Peacock, this hugely inspirational individual, working with her to kind of act as this supportive, cheerleading role for the profession was great, and worked with ITV on campaigns, moved it into this future of teaching campaign, which won awards. And it was great to be a part of that and talk about, if our teachers aren't being supported either, like, how do we come out of this pandemic and ensure the education of children and young people is as good as it can be? So I think those are the two, the most recent. But yeah, I'm always kind of itchy fingers looking for the next one.
Yeah.
So I feel like the clock is ticking, that I've got to find something else now, something else to work on, a next campaign.
Well, you've got the right character then, because that's really all of us are looking for that next buzz, aren't we? Yeah. Quite often it's like chasing the dragon, isn't it? It's chasing the next hit,
next campaign hit. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's where we get our buzz from. So, have you had any real failures? And we've all had them, where we think, you know, oh, this is going to land, this is going to be brilliant, and then day comes along and no one covers it, or, you know.
Yeah, I think it is a constant thing when you're working in PR that you can't predict what the news agenda is going to do. You know, like at Fairshare, we've had great pieces of comms about surveys we've done or great work, and then there will be an election called, or we've had, like 9 prime ministers in the space of 3 weeks, you know, or like, you know, so many changes. So that's always a challenge that you can't, like, and it's taking staff of those organizations you work with on that journey, because obviously we all answer to boards or senior staff, and they're like, well, why hasn't it happened? You know, because you can't control what the news agenda is going to do. So that's always something. So there's a bit of that. How do you pivot? How do you then use your other channels, your digital channels, to make the most of it? What can you almost scavenge from it and repurpose for future things? So, you know, I'm very keen at FairShare and all the organizations that it's not just like a one shot and done. Oh, well, didn't work. Never use it again. How else can you use that story? And I think that's the concept piece. Like, how else can you repurpose this content? You shouldn't be just constantly almost like binning it when it's done. There's so many more uses. Yeah. So I think that's where things don't always go to plan. But, you know, like there's so many times throughout my career where I'm like, oh, that's gone badly, you know, where there's lessons to be learned.
Well, that's kind of the good thing about having owned media as well as earned media, because at least you can put it out on your own socials, even if it doesn't land in the traditional media. And it might not be as much of a win as you'd hoped, but at least it's not gone completely.
Too true.
Are there any particular forms of media that you really like?
And it's something I want to get FairShare more into, and in other organizations, is podcasts. You know, like having this opportunity, it feels more natural and people are listening to it on the go wherever they are. Like, podcasts is great. You know, you look at the US election and the candidates are heading to podcasts to talk about their messaging. Like the same in the UK earlier this year. Like this is where views are being shaped, where news agendas are being set more and more. So I think any organization it's valuable to be like looking at where are your audiences, what are they listening to, where can you get on those podcasts, and like what is the next social media platform? Like, we are probably going to reduce the amount of time we spend on X and Twitter because of just where Twitter's becoming, and more people are leaving that and going, say, Threads or other platforms. So I think you shouldn't, just because we've always done it, we've always been there, we've always gone to that. That doesn't mean that you should always do that. You constantly need to be reviewing, looking at your audiences, where they're going, and follow them.
Yeah. And I see social media as generally being kind of fast food. LinkedIn, slightly different. I think there's really good conversations on there. But I see social media as fast food, and a podcast is a really decent Sunday roast. You know, you've got a bit more you've got a bit more time on it. You've got a really full meal there, and you've got a nice, you know, spotted dick or pudding after as well. You know, you're sitting there enjoying it. Is there any message that you'd give to your younger self?
Many style advice, and I think the highlighted mullet wasn't a great idea in 2004. But I think just taking that time to pause and reflect was always be good. So I was constantly worrying that I was going to be found out, that I didn't know what I was doing, that I was doing something wrong. And so I struggle with my confidence. You know, I remember starting at the environment agency, like, oh, can you write this press release? Like, what's a press release? And not writing it like a story and being like, but you've got this and you'll learn it. And there are great people around you that you can learn from. So I think having that confidence that you do know this. And I think this is always I say to my colleagues in my team, and when I'm meeting with people, that we are the experts. You know, us comms people are the experts. We're immersed in this world. And so everyone's got an opinion on comms. They've sent an email like, I am a comms expert because I've posted once on social media. But no, we are the people that have spent our careers in this world, that we understand it. We should be listened to. And so just trying to tell my younger self, like, you're learning great skill. Like, have faith in your abilities. I think I probably need to tell myself that now sometimes as well, with just how fast-paced things are. But we're getting there.
Well, we all get a bit of imposter syndrome sometimes, don't we? And, you know, and as you say, yes. And as you get older, you suddenly think, oh, I'm not with it with, you know, young people anymore. I don't know how they're getting their news or anything else. But that's why I sometimes throw myself into things. I made sure that as a company, we were on TikTok about 4 years ago. You know, nice. No one else was doing it. And I said, we need to do TikTok. People are going to be using this. We need to get used to using this medium and communicating this medium. And so, you know, we're at both ends of the thing. TikTok's our fast food. We do a plastic-free post in 60 seconds, you know, 60-second clip, all the news. And then I've got this long form as well, so that we're at both ends of the table. We're giving people our comms as you know, McDonald's fries, as well as the Sunday roast, so we can get everyone. Final question. If you could have dinner with anyone alive or dead, who would it be?
I immediately went to David Bowie. And I could think of something like really aspirational. There are plenty of people, fantastic people, really aspirational, influential. But I am a huge David Bowie fan. He's my favourite singer. And what his interest in the world, aside from the music, his passion for creativity and just learning about the risks that he took, I think there's a lot that we can learn there. So I'd love to, sit down with Bowie. That would have been fantastic. And also, when he died in 2016, it felt like everything went a bit crazy, didn't it? So, you know, maybe that wouldn't have happened. But how can you not love David Bowie?
Absolutely. Bromley boy. Starman Ben Ashmore, Head of Marketing, Communications and Public Affairs at Fairshare. You've been speaking to me, John Higginson, on Communicating Purpose. If you'd like to know more about how Higginson Strategy supports purpose-led organisations, please visit higginsonstrategy.com.